Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is the social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
You are listening to a Hillbilly Horror Stories classic episode.
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. Now welcome your host, Jenny Polly, and his lovely wife, Tracy. I hear she's a lovely ghoul.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 29 of Hillbilly Horror Stories. And, of course, I'm your host, Jerry. I've got Tracy here beside me.
Hey, guys.
And we're going to get serious on you for just a second. We're still going to have fun with the episode, and it'll be the same old Jerry and Tracy you're used to. But I can honestly say I think every one of us have been touched by suicide. It's a disease that, I guess honestly it's not a disease, but the person that feels like they have to do that, they feel desperate. Desolate in some cases, but it really affects a lot of people around them also. And we just wanted to say, if you're one of those people that feel like that, talk to your friends. That's why we chose to play the REM song, because it tells you take comfort in your friends, such as you do. You got family members, you got friends. Hell, if you want to pick up the phone and call us, our phone number is right on the website.
Absolutely.
Email us, send us a message. We'll talk to anybody. I've had some personal experiences in my life, and I've tried to help a lot of people that have been through the situation. I've attempted suicide before about 15 years ago, back in 2001, so 16 years ago. Luckily, it didn't happen, and my life changed completely after that. And I just want people to know that if you hang in there, that your life will always get better. Always remember this phrase. This has gotten me through the last 16 years of my life. Nothing is ever as bad as you think it is, and it's never as good as you think it is. So,
amen.
I went through a divorce, felt like I lost everything, but the reality of it is it wasn't the situation I was meant to have, and now I'm about as happy in life as I could be, and I wouldn't have experienced any of that had I finished what I had started to do. So,
well, amen. I'm glad you didn't, because then I wouldn't have my honey bunny right now.
So that's the serious part of the show, but we do want people to know that. I want to give a couple of real quick shout-outs, because we had something... a milestone for us happened today. We actually went over 50,000 downloads, and that's thanks to every one of you listeners sharing, telling your friends, the iTunes reviews. We just got ranked 53rd in our category on iTunes. That's our highest ranking by far, and it's happened what seems like overnight.
Woohoo!
And we thank you guys for that.
Thank you guys so much. This is so awesome. It's so fun to look on the websites and just see things happening, and we really do owe it all to you guys, and we appreciate your continued support.
And this is something I should have done a long time ago, and I'm kind of mad at myself for not doing it. I want to give a big thank you to any military, no matter what country you're in, but absolutely, especially the U.S., who listen to us. Even if you don't listen to us, you still have our utmost respect. I usually like to thank anybody I see in the military, thank them for their service. And, you know, for whatever reason, I just haven't done that yet. And I could kick myself for doing that. But I want to give a big thank you to all of you out there listening.
Yes, thank you, guys. We appreciate your service.
And I want to give a couple of, I know we've been not really doing the shout-outs so much at the beginning of the show here recently, but I want to actually give a couple here that I think need a shout-out. And the first one's going to be a new podcast out there. They're not really new. They've been out for a while. It's just I don't think a lot of people realize they're there. And I really enjoy this podcast, and I wanted to try to help them out a little bit. If you get a chance, give a listen to Don't Break the Oath. This is a British podcast, and it's a couple of guys on there that they kind of similar to what we do, except with heavy British accents. And it's a pretty cool show. So if you get a chance, give those guys a listen and help them out a little bit. I want to give one a shout out to Gail Garoni. She is actually an Australian listener. Thank you, Gail, for listening.
Thank you, Gail.
And that brings me to another one. Now, we've got an Australian listener that's one of my favorites. I'm not going to lie. Dana Lee Gleason. And she swears up and down that almost every Australian out there, she got them to listen. But we found out that she didn't get Gail to listen. But she did get her boyfriend, Lockie, to listen. And we haven't given him a shout-out. Dana's had one, but I want to give Lockie a shout-out. But I also want to say thank you, Dana, because she has researched some stories for us. She actually gave us a screenshot of our iTunes reviews in Australia for me, so I got to see those. And, of course, one of them was hers. Go figure.
That's great. We love that.
But I appreciate it, Dana. Thank you for all the hard work. You know, she told me one time that she went on a trip. A bunch of her friends went from Australia to New Zealand, and they were sitting around a campfire listening to our show.
Oh, my gosh,
so,
really?
So when you got a bunch of Australians in New Zealand listening to a couple of hicks from Kentucky, that's pretty damn cool.
Oh, that is very cool. Roasting some weenies and some marshmallows, hopefully. And
always got weenies on the brain.
I know it, because they're good.
But my biggest shout-out tonight goes to Anthony Alvarenga. Anthony has actually went through some medical situations, and he's given us some credit, albeit very little credit I think we deserve, but he's went through some cancer treatments with Hodgkin's lymphoma and actually is in remission now, and he wanted to thank us for helping him. But the reality of it is Anthony has helped us way more than we could have helped him.
Absolutely.
Most of you know we've been on Real Ghost Stories Online and we've been on History Goes Bump. Neither one of those probably would have happened without Anthony, because he personally wrote both of those shows on his own and asked them to get us on the show. He's went on Facebook. He's went in groups. He's wrote every paranormal group out there and told them about us. And all this is just because he likes the show and he wants to contribute. And we consider Anthony more than a fan. He's a friend. We've talked to him on the phone. We've talked to him on Skype. And he's just an all-around good guy. And I wanted to give him a special thank you.
We love you, Anthony. And we really appreciate everything that you've done for us, honey. We really do.
Okay, so let's talk about our story tonight. Man, most of you people out there have heard of the Suicide Force of Japan. The actual name is, I'm going to try not to butcher this, Aoki Gahara, and I think I actually said that right. But in Japanese, it stands for Sea of Trees. And they say that because when you're in this forest, you can see the trees, the top of it kind of waves back and forth. They're really tall trees. They've been around for over 300 years. And you can see them waving back and forth, so it kind of looks like the sea, which is how it got its name. Now, it's at the very foot of Mount Fuji. Of course, that's one of the biggest mountains in the world. And it's 30 kilometers for you people using the metric system. And for us Americans, that's about 12 square miles. It's hard lava. It's because this Mount Fuji was a volcano.
Right.
And it erupted, you know, years and years and years ago. And so that whole area down there is actually lava. And what's funny about it is you can't really dig into any of the surface with, you know, picks or axes or shovels or anything like that.
So, nothing can get through?
Not really. I mean, you can, but it would be hard.
Well, but yeah.
But the thing of it is because of that, these trees, they're all windy and you know, you got straight up and down trees, but the roots and stuff just kind of go along the ground, which makes it kind of treacherous.
Mm-hmm. It's really cool looking, though. Yeah.
Now, on the western edge, there's a bunch of caves that are filled with ice. And there's a couple of caves that people go as a tourist and, you know, schools and stuff right. come to see on a regular basis. But, you know, parts of this forest are very dense. And because of that, they advise you when you do go, if you're coming to visit on a tourist trip or something, they advise you to stay on the paths that are carved out there because it's very hard to find your way back.
Yeah. And it looks really dangerous, too, because there's like places you walk and then all of a sudden you'll kind of look down and there's like big holes, but you really can't see it until you're right up on it because of the brush that's gone over.
Yeah, and it's said that when you go in, you get a really eerie feeling. Did I say fearing or feeling?
You said feeling.
Okay. It sure didn't sound right in my head. But anyway, you get a really eerie feeling. And there's all kinds of reasons for that. Mostly because the trees are packed pretty tight. And because of that, the wind doesn't really get through there so much. Mm-hmm. And it keeps all the sound in. So you got no wind going through there. So it can become eerily quiet. And part of that's because the lava that's underground is porous. So when you got something porous like it kind of absorbs the sound.
Oh, well, that's interesting.
People will tell you that when they're in there that they don't hear any animals. They don't hear birds singing. And I think that's mainly because of the... people will tell you they think it's because of the demons or the eeriness, or they think that's part of it, and they think it's got to do with the ghostly nature of the place.
Oh, okay.
But I think it's probably more because of the wind not being able to get through
right.
and then the sound being absorbed. So there's probably animal sounds. You just don't kind of hear them.
Oh.
But most people will tell you that the animals and stuff are real quiet, like they sense something's coming, and that's why they're quiet.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Why is this place like it is? I guess it depends on who you talk to. There's a history, and there's something, you know, most of us have heard about in Japan. Suicide is kind of an honor thing. I mean, they don't look at death exactly the way we do, and they think there's an honor to take in blame for something that's happened and killing yourself.
Wow, and, that's weird.
I mean, it's been that way for years. I mean, you've mm-hmm. always heard about the samurais with the harakiri.
Yeah.
Not the announcer for the Cubs.
No, not him.
Hey, Cub fans. That was horrible.
Okay.
Before my surgery, I could probably do that a little bit better, but that surgery screwed my throat up. So.
Oh, that's true.
But you had that situation. You had other types of suicide over there. Well, back all the way up until the 19th century, there was a Japanese custom called ubasute, and I'm sure I mispronounced that.
That sounded good, though.
But it was a practice of taking old people, the elderly people, they would take them out to the forest and just leave them.
Oh, God. You just, like, they starve to death and die?
Yep. Starve to death, dehydration,
oh,
the elements, depending on what time of the year it is. But that's what they did. And a lot of times this happened during times of famine or drought or something like that.
Yeah, I was going to say, so what's the point of them doing that? I mean, because times were tough and that's one less mouth to feed?
I guess, but I mean, they could have just kept them at home and not fed them.
Oh, my gosh.
I guess they just didn't want to be bothered with them.
Ugh, that's really sad.
Of course, I know some elderly people that smell really bad, and that's probably the only way they could get the smell out of the house was to take them to a forest. That's my guess.
Oh, Lord.
I don't know. But some people say that all those people that were left there, their ghosts
are still there.
And that's what the problem is. As a matter of fact, they call them yuri, and that's Japanese for ghost of the dead. And some people say they draw people in,
mm-hmm.
kind of like a magnetic force that even people who don't contemplate suicide, it draws them in and gives them those suicidal thoughts.
So are you saying then that this forest is a place where you actually have permission to go in there and commit suicide?
No, you don't have permission.
Oh.
This is just where a lot of people go to do it.
Oh.
Matter of fact, before we get on that, let's go this. In the forest, there's a lot of paranormal activity. People say it's demons in there. They said you can hear screams.
Mm-hmm.
One guy was talking about that he heard screams and he followed it. There was nobody else in the forest at all that he could tell. But he followed the screams, and when he got there, it was a dead body at the base of a tree. But the body had been there for a while. obviously, just by the decomposition. So this body wasn't screaming, but it could have been the soul or a demon.
Why would anybody want to go in that forest, especially by yourself?
If people say that they see white shapes, like floating back and forth between the trees up in the middle of the air, ghostly figures, stuff like that. So there's a lot of that going on. But to get back to the suicide question you had, are people allowed to just go back there and commit suicide? No. But this is the number one place in Japan to commit suicide. They pull over 105 bodies out in a lot of cases each year. And in 2003, they quit telling how many bodies they pulled out of there. It might have been mid-2000, they quit releasing the number because they didn't want people to, they didn't want to encourage people to come in there and do it.
But if they knew people were doing that, why would they let people even, why would that even be open to the public?
Because it's just a forest. You can't keep people from going in the forest. I mean, people have been going to the forest for field trips and to see the caves and all that.
Well, I know. I just feel like if they're aware that people, if people are going to do that, then they would, you know, just shut it down and not let anybody go through there.
Now, I mentioned that this was the number one place in Japan to commit suicide. It's actually the number two place in the world. Do you know what the number one place in the world to commit suicide is? And surprisingly enough, it's not a Kanye West concert.
Well, that would have been the top 10 on my list.
So do you know what number one in the world to commit suicide?
No, I have no clue.
Golden Gate Bridge.
What?
In San Francisco.
No kidding.
More people jump off the Golden Gate Bridge to commit suicide than they do any other specific place in the world.
Wow, that is amazing. People just don't do it, okay?
So let's talk about some numbers. 2002, 78 people committed suicide there that they know of. Now, keep in mind, when we give these numbers, some of these bodies weren't found for years, so there's never any accurate number as to who actually committed suicide. These woods are very dense, and they do sweeps every year since 1970. They go through and they sweep as much of the forest as they can, and they'll find these bodies, but some of these bodies, because they're so far off the beaten path, they could have been there for 2, 3, 4 years.
So do they find other stuff there, like their belongings?
Yeah, there's all kinds of belongings there. They say if you bring a tent out there, that means that there's some kind of a doubt whether you're actually going to go through with it or not. So that's one of the things that they look at, is whether you brought a tent or not. So when you see tents, and a lot of people leave the tents, some people, not everybody actually commits suicide that goes out there. Some of them try and don't.
And they just changed their mind, or they just failed at it?
Sometimes they just failed. They said, I think 2010 or 2011, I'm trying to go off memory here, that there was over 200 people who attempted suicide there, but only like 58 actually succeeded.
Oh, wow.
So,
I don't know.
In 2002, there were 78 people. 2003, there was 105 people. Mm-hmm. So it's jumping up every single year. And the most common way that people actually commit suicide there is hanging. Or overdoses. So they take sleeping pills
and just
go to sleep.
Wow. I feel bad for these people that do this. I don't know. It's so depressing. Now, wasn't there something about there's also a certain time of the year when they do it? Or
yeah, actually, March is the most common time of year, because that's when the fiscal year ends, which means that for some of these business people, they know what kind of year they had financially, and if they had a real bad financial year, that could cause for this. And the average person to commit suicide, or I shouldn't say the average, but the most common, is 40 to 50-year-old businessmen.
Yeah.
So that just all kind of goes in. But the rate of suicide has led officials to put a sign up at the entrance of the park. So what we got is that we do have signs out there. It's written in Japanese, and it basically says, think of your family. If you're planning on committing suicide, go talk to your friends, think of your family. And it even has a helpline that you can call.
Yes.
So why here? Why do so many people come here to commit suicide? A whole bunch of different... I'm sorry, the dog just farted, and it threw me off a little bit. So let's get back on track.
Oh, Lord.
There's a bunch of different theories on why people like to come here to commit suicide. And here's a couple of them, and I'm going to butcher these names. But there was a novel written in 1960 called Kuroi Jokai, written by something Japanese. I think it's Sayeko Matsumoto.
Okay, that's not
gonna,
so bad.
That's going to be pretty close. Google it, you'll figure it out. But he wrote this, and it was kind of like a, I don't know, like a Romeo and Juliet type novel. Mm-hmm. And at the end, the girl, she went here to this forest and committed suicide. So they think that that's part of the reason, because sometimes they have found this book where people have left it next to their bodies. And they think, you know, maybe somebody that's had a bad breakup or something like that just finds it romantic to come here and emulate what was in the book.
Oh.
A bigger one, in 1993, there was a, I guess we could say it's a book, could be a guide, but it was a complete suicide manual. And that was listed, they listed that this place as the perfect place to commit suicide. And they found that book with a lot of people.
It's I just don't like that.
It's like I said, just you got to keep in mind the Japanese do not think of suicide the same way that most Western civilization thinks of suicide. They actually see some honor in what's going on. There's over 2,000 people a year that commit suicide in Japan, most of them from jumping in front of trains.
Oh, God.
I mean, it's
that is just horrible to me.
So, it's, I mean, it's...
They just need a hug.
It's, they need something. You know, so like I said, when you go and you're there in the forest, like I said, the main thing is you want to stay on the path. That when you get in there, they say compasses don't work, GPS doesn't work. Some people obviously say, well, that's because you're in there and it's, you know, demons and there's ghosts and it's supernatural. The truth of the matter is compasses and stuff will work. As long as you don't hold them too close to the ground.
Because, okay, what's under there?
Well, it's because of the hot liquid magma.
Jesus.
But
you're on a roll today, aren't you?
But all the volcanic lava and stuff that's under there's a lot of iron ore in the ground. And because of there's iron, it causes the a big magnetic field, so it causes the But if you're holding it at normal levels, they're supposed to work.
Oh, my gosh.
GPS won't work just like you wouldn't if you're in a tunnel or something.
Yeah.
And same thing with your cell phone.
So, that is so scary because you could get so lost in there forever and couldn't find your way out.
Well, that's the whole thing. They tell you to stay on the path. Now, some people, because they go in there and they want to go off the path, they take colored tape.
Yeah, I saw that.
Or something like that. And they'll tie it to the tree and or string.
Yeah, yeah.
And they'll take it down. They tell you not to do that, and they try to pick all this stuff up when you go through the forest. But if you go through the forest, you see all this tape where people mm-hmm. try to find their way. Now, they say when you get to the end of this tape, you're either going to find a victim or you're going to find maybe the remnants of a tent or something where they decided not to do it. But following that tape is usually going to lead to something. You've got that. And then you've got the fact that some people say that, you know, it's just like a, what is that, like Hansel and Gretel? Remember when they left the trail of breadcrumbs?
Uh-huh.
It's kind of the same thing, but some people say they just want to see what's over there. But once again, this is a kind of a treacherous terrain.
Yeah.
You're at the foot of a mountain. It's rocky. It's
uneven.
It's slick. Tree roots everywhere.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not something, and it's easy to get lost. If you get lost, you can literally die out there.
Well, because tell you I'd be dead because I would never, ever find my way out.
Everything looks the same. And if compasses aren't working properly and you don't have it, you can't call anybody because your phone's not going to work out there for the most part. So where did all this start? Well, we talked about the Yuri and we talked about, you know, taking the old people out there. It's kind of like when you do with like dogs and stuff, you take them out to a farm. I wonder if they told them that. Okay, Grandma, we're going to take you to a nice farm where you can run and play.
Oh, gosh. That is sickening to me.
You're supposed to be nice to your elders.
No, you better think about being nice to your elders. If that is, I mean, who would even think to do that? I would never think to do that.
Yeah, I mean, sooner or later, your kids are going to be deciding to put you in a nursing home or not. So, you know, we talked about these books kind of glorifying, you know, the one started in 1960, but... You know, there were suicides out there way before this. That was just kind of when it picked up a little bit. Now, the first suicide recorded was a Buddhist monk. He wanted to purify himself by starving himself. And then other monks kind of started following it, and it became tradition. So now there was a Buddhist monk, and I'll screw this name up too, Kiyomyo Fuquay. I'm pretty sure I got that. I don't think it's fuck. So it's Fuquay.
Well, I think it's, so they understand.
Kumyo Fuquay, he actually set up an altar out there to try to like exorcise the demons because he said it seemed like it was so evil out there.
Gosh.
Now, oddly enough, when we posted that we were going to do this story, we actually had a listener who wants to remain anonymous for obvious reasons tell us a story about their brother. And she wanted me to share the story about his experiences over there. So that's what I want to do. So she said her brother has lived in, I guess I gave it away, it's a girl. I said her. I'm trying not to do
that. That's okay. Well. I'm pretty sure that's a lot of people still. So I think it's good.
Said her brother has lived in Japan for 12 years. He's been to the suicide forest. Here's how the story kind of unravels. Her brother's a translator and a lecturer in Shibuya. In 2011, there was a magnitude 9 earthquake and her brother's girlfriend died. He spiraled into depression. In Japan, Samurai Bushido history, which is his learnings, when your partner dies, a sign of loyalty and respect is to harikari or seppuku yourself. And seppuku is, well, of course we know harikari is like stab yourself with a sword. Seppuku is basically disemboweling yourself, where you just cut your stomach open and let all your entrails fall out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Gosh, that's so, ugh.
So anyways, she said her brother planned a trip to the suicide forest. He told her that since then, he's told her since then that people can pay money to an unauthorized tour guide to take you out there and leave you to take your own life or help you complete the task if that's your final wish. So these are like illegal underground type deals.
Suicide assistance, sort of.
Right. The Dr. Kevorkian of Japan.
Yeah.
Her brother paid a man and visited the suicide forest. He paid an unauthorized tour guide approximately $400 U.S. money. He drove you out there, assisted in any messages or letters that you wish to deliver to your family, and then would either stay with you or go. He would rather die with honor than live without her. So he's picked up on the Japanese customs in the 12 years he's been over there.
I mean, you know, you hate to say that's kind of sweet because it's ending another life and that's not good. But it is quite amazing that they feel that way about their loved one so much.
I asked her how he's doing today and she said he's been obsessed with suicide, constantly talks about it, and he visits the forest regularly. It's weird. Something happened when he visited that forest that changed his mind to complete his life. And she said, but now he's constantly dreaming of death. And she said, it's weird, but my brother is an empty shell. Her happy brother is now an empty shell.
Aww.
So I want to thank you for sharing that story. I know that's a tough one to share.
Yeah, that has to be so hard because you never know from day to day, I guess. You're always worrying and thinking about what he's going to do or whatever, and you know, our thoughts are with you because I know that has to be a hard thing to have to live with every day.
But we appreciate you sharing the story to put a little personal touch
on
the situation instead of just reading what everybody else knows or what you're reading. And this is something that somebody was personally affected by this situation. And luckily, he didn't follow through with it.
Yeah.
And hopefully, he'll find some inner peace somewhere.
I hope so.
Well, this is going to be a weird transition, but I didn't mention at the beginning of the show that we actually have a special guest tonight. I actually got to do an interview with Richard McLean Smith. And those of you who have not listened to Unexplained, it was actually listed as one of iTunes' best of 2016.
Awesome.
It's definitely one of my favorite podcasts. And what I love about Richard is if you've listened to the show, you know what I'm talking about. You don't ever get to hear him talk in a regular speaking voice. He's always in story mode.
Mm-hmm.
So he tells a story, and he's got one of those storytelling abilities that just always has you on the edge of your seat, just listening for the next thing. And so he started doing some ads for an advertiser that I wish would call us, but they haven't yet. And he started doing some ads, and when I heard it, I thought, oh, cool, I'll get to hear what he sounds like normally. And he reads the ads just like he does.
That's amazing.
The storytelling. So I'm like, I still don't know. So I got lucky and he agreed to do an interview with me. So he actually cuts loose a little bit. And most of you probably have never heard him actually talk in a regular conversation. And he was a super nice guy. And I learned a lot from him, and I appreciate him giving me time. But I wanted to play you that interview with him, and I also want to make sure that you guys listen to The Unexplained. It is without a doubt one of the best podcasts out there. I don't like to compare podcasts to others, but if you like lore, this is along the same lines. It's not exactly the same, but if you like lore, you would really like this too. And it was probably the very first paranormal podcast that I ever listened to. So I just wanted to give you guys a chance to learn about Richard McClain Smith. So let's listen to this interview.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
All right, you guys are in for a real treat tonight. I am joined by Richard McClain Smith. Some of you will know this name. If not, it's a name you really need to get to know. He hosts a podcast called Unexplained over in Great Britain, and I'm going to be the first to tell you it is without a doubt one of my favorites. It was the very first paranormal / unexplained type show that I ever listened to. Everything I'd listened to podcast-wise was sports before this. I did a search, I found this one, and I was hooked from the very beginning, and I'm sure you get this a lot, Richard, but my only complaint is there's not more episodes, so I'm sure you hear that on a regular basis.
Yeah, no, well, I mean, I would love to do more, but as you know yourself, it's a time-consuming business.
No, very, very much so.
But thank you very much for that introduction. I'm very honored by your words and honored to be on the show.
Oh, it's no problem at all. Thank you. And hopefully we'll get you some more listeners out there on some of our guests that probably haven't listened yet. I'm assuming a big part of them already have because they're groupies on this paranormal and unexplained stuff. So most people kind of listen to everything that's out there. And your name and show has come across as one of definite quality. So like I said, I'm the honored one for being able to talk to you. So I appreciate your time.
No problem.
So let me ask you this. Let's start off with what I like to ask all my guests. And you probably don't know this, but we do very few interviews on my show. But every once in a while, I'll catch somebody like yourself that I consider to be one of my idols in this business. And if I get a chance to interview you, then that, you know, like I said, I do this more for me than I do for the listeners, but I know the listeners love it too.
Yeah. Well, thanks.
So tell me a little bit about the origins of what made you start Unexplained. Is this something you've had a fascination with for a long time? Is it something you just felt like it was something that was a void out there in the podcast industry? Just give me a little bit of background on the show.
Yeah, well, a bit of both, really. I mean, I was always been fascinated by these kind of stories and this sort of, you know, the strange things out there. And I mean, I grew up watching The X-Files, Twin Peaks, you know, they're all kind of classic shows. Actually, one of my favorite shows when I was younger was a show called Eerie Indiana. I don't know if you remember that.
I do.
It was a kid show. I think it was on Nickelodeon. And, I mean, through that, you kind of find your way to, you know, The Twilight Zone, which is a bit before my time. But, you know, I used to find old shows of that. And but it never been something that occurred to me that I could sort of do myself, if that makes any sense. Sort of investigate. I mean, investigate is the wrong word, but I mean, I'm a writer, really. I'm an aspiring writer. I'd love to write TV drama, and that's really what I want to do. But the podcast really was something that I realized I could sort of tie the two things together. My interest in that, in the sort of eerie and the strange and the paranormal, and it was an outlet for me to kind of write, basically. And I was a musician for a bit, so I can produce and I can write music, and I just thought, you know, you can just do this in your bedroom, basically. And you're right, like I did kind of think that there was a bit of a gap, especially for like these kind of stories from a British perspective, from, you know, stories that have happened in Britain. They tend to be, all these kind of shows tend to be coming out of the States. And often they're like a couple of guys talking, or, you know, guys and girls talking together. And, it felt like there was an opportunity there to do a show that was much more like you know, trying to make it atmospheric and scripted. And the key thing I think you were alluding to before is that I don't try and explain what happened. I just sort of try and give you the facts as best we know them.
Well, you do a fantastic job of the way that you produce the story. And
thanks.
I like the fact that, like I said, it's just the way that you tell it, your voice inflection, the music in the background, it really is a perfect blend of everything to get the point across. And I feel like you leave no stones unturned. I mean, when I listen to the show, I feel like I've probably heard everything there is to hear. So it's awesomely researched. So I appreciate that.
I try and get the sense that, like you say, that, you know, like it's, I'm giving you all the facts as far as we know them. And obviously, you know, I don't necessarily, I mean, I wouldn't want to say either way whether I believed them or not, but I guess the idea is that there are, I think you know when you research these kind of stories that there are a lot of things written about them, and often they're, like, you'll go from one article to another and the names will be different, or the ages, or the dates, you know, very sort of simple, basic things that I think in the sort of Chinese whispers, in the retelling of the story, they get kind of distorted, and the more they get distorted, the less credible the story becomes. So I make an effort to sort of find the, you know, what is the actual day? What were the actual names? And, you know, and who were the real people involved? And I think that gives it a bit of authenticity that some other shows don't kind of manage to do, I guess.
Well, that's one of the things we try to do on our show. Now, we're not near as professional as you are. I mean, I wish I had a voice like yours. I mean, there's something about a British voice.
I think your accent is much more interesting than mine.
But there's something about a British voice telling a story that just, to me, is more captivating. So, I mean, I've always been a fan of listening to any show that's got a British narrator or a host. So that's just kind of my thing. So I'm kind of drawn to you guys.
I think it's, I mean, I would say the other way around, but I think that's the way it is, isn't it? When it's something different to yourself, it can sometimes seem more interesting.
Probably so, but either way, it's still the highest compliment I can give you. So,
thank you very much.
The other thing is, you know, it's like I said, we try to do the same thing. I try to be very technical on times and dates and people, because that's something we get compliments all the time on is that they like the fact that we're so thorough. And, you know, maybe who knows, some of that I've gotten from probably some of the other shows I know I've listened to, because I like it when they're technical, because I feel like they've done their research. So that's.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, we're talking about things that are quite easy to dismiss. And, you know, I think the fun for me really is not dwelling too much on whether it's real or true. It's just sort of enjoying the mystery of it all. So, but at the same time, the minute you know, if you were to say something that was like patently untrue or was wrong, then it kind of destroys that illusion.
Right. And sometimes you have to allude to the fact that, you know, I don't necessarily believe this is true or not true. This is just the story that's out there. We did a bunch of, we've done three shows on rock and roll and the occult, and we've done some stuff with Led Zeppelin and the Aleister Crowley ties and that type of stuff. And like I said, those stories are out there. You can believe there's backward masking or you cannot believe it. Whether I believe or not believe, it's still out there. And this is what it sounds like it says. I'm not saying I believe that's what it says, but this is what it sounds like. See if you can hear it. So, yeah, it is kind of touchy on some of this stuff because you can't really present it as fact. You can just present it as what everybody is saying.
Are you talking about is it Stairway to Heaven?
Yes.
Played backward?
Yeah, we did a whole show on Stairway to Heaven, basically. But, you know.
So what did you, sorry, did you say you did it? Have you got an LP, a record of?
No, I found some clips that were already online where people had done it backwards and just replayed those. It was a whole lot easier than try to find the spots myself But, you know, like I said, you know, those tend to be things that people like, the things where you can sit and try to make your own mind up. I think people like
that. Exactly. And it's great for, you know, podcasts and that sort of audio is really cool. I've been trying to think of ways that I could, I mean, try and bring audio clips into my show somehow, because it's, you know, it's obviously the nature of the medium of podcasting. But I've not quite done it yet.
Yeah, it's a tough thing to do if you're going to try to do it right. And like I said, we're not the most professional group, so I definitely don't have the tools to make it as professional sounding, but it gets the point across, and our listeners don't seem to really have a problem with the way it's done. So hey, if they don't have a problem with it, I'm happy to just keep doing what I can provide more.
No, I think the show sounds good. I think it's people, it sort of feels like you're listening to your friends and things, and I think that's really a nice thing for people to.
Yeah, and that's the whole point. Let me ask you this, because we brought up Aleister Crowley. Now, one of my favorite shows you did was episode 10 in the first season where you talked about Beleskin House. Loved that episode. Yeah. Do you have any stories that you've done thus far that you feel like stood out as one of your favorites, or do they all kind of have that same love in your heart like having kids do?
I think I've been told you can have favorite kids.
It's true.
By my own parents. I think my favorite story is either the first one, because that really set me off, which is the story about the lady who was also a cult, associated with the occult and a secret magic order that I think had links to Crowley at some point. But that was the story of Netta Fornario, who went to the island off the coast of Scotland, and something happened to her that, like, overnight she was found dead the next morning in a fairy mound, and there was no signs of foul play, and they just had everything, because it had this extraordinary atmosphere and of the location, but also the backstory of her being part of this strange secret order, and she'd gone there to conduct some kind of ritual, and then of course the tragedy of her death. So it just kind of, it was, when I found that story, it made me, that was the moment where I thought, you know, maybe there's a podcast that I can make out of this kind of thing. And then the second favorite really is the one about the guys on the light, on the island, the lighthouse keepers.
Yes.
I don't know if you remember, but, again, that was sort of, it was just a really, it just had, the story had so much going for it. And, you know, again, the atmosphere, and it had this sort of strange, sort of mythical, mysterious quality to whatever had happened to them, and I used it to do a song at the end, which I try to resist as much as possible, but I let myself off and I did one for that one. what I'm trying to say about it, it was quite a touching story as well, because I think I felt ultimately that all three men had died, you know, doing their job, and their job was to guide people to prevent them from, you know, prevent boats from hitting the rocks and other people dying. And it was sort of the fact that they'd, I don't know, it sounded like that it was quite a tough life being a lighthouse keeper in 1903 or whenever it was, I can't remember exactly. I was kind of touched by it in the end as well.
You cover quite a wide variety of things in your podcast. That's why I kind of put it as the paranormal / unexplained / history, because, you know, I can't say everything's paranormal because everything's not paranormal. But it's, the stories are fascinating. I mean, just like the you know, most people don't realize, but you do seasons, and you take a fairly lengthy break in between seasons, which I'm assuming you're doing some research and stuff for your upcoming season during that time. But the newest season just kicked off end of January, I think January 25th, 27th, somewhere in that range. And you did a two-parter on Bella and the Witch Elm, which I had heard briefly about the story before, but you went into some really good detail over two episodes and an extra, which is the other thing like. You put in little extra episodes in between your episodes that kind of something that got left out of the previous. But I love the fact that you'll do something like that, and then you've had stories about submarine explosions. You've had the live podcast, which was also one of my favorites, that you did at the London Podcast Festival. That story about the haunted farm was a phenomenal story. I loved that one. But I think I think people will like your variety.
Thanks. There's the Bella one. There was a slight. It was getting slightly towards true crime, but I think it had an element in it that was, you know, sort of not supernatural, but it had this spookiness to it that was that I think elevated it to a bit more than true crime. And I guess what I'm trying to say is I want to keep my mind open about the different stories that I can include, but they all ultimately have to have something, you know, sort of strange and unnerving about them that's slightly beyond just the human being element, sort of, you know, the human element of unnerving. There has to be, you know, suggestion of something else sort of hidden, lurking behind the story, if you know what I mean.
No, absolutely. I agree. And like you said, that not everything, sometimes the stories like of Henry Holmes, who ran the hotel in Chicago, that's more of a true crime, but that would be something we would feature and I plan on somewhere in the future on our show, because I still find it creepy enough.
Something like that, yeah, exactly. And also I think, I mean, the other difficulty with true crime or straying into that area is that if you're doing it for, you know, about stories that aren't that long ago or quite recent, you know, there are real people who are associated with the people you're talking about, and it's a very kind of, I think you have to be quite careful the way that you might investigate those kind of stories. But if it's something from, you know, Victorian times or back in the 19th century, then, you know, I think you're kind of safe to at least discuss, you know, you at least use the story somehow in your show. But I was just thinking off the top of my head as well I had one story that was about a guy who had an exorcism carried out on him, and the next day he quite sort of brutally and again tragically he murdered his wife. But he was probably suffering from severe mental health problems, and whatever had happened has sort of exacerbated that. And I was telling that. I do know that, I mean, he is still around, and I believe his children were also still around. So, you know, I wanted to be careful in the way that I retold the story, that I was trying not to sensationalize things or make any point or judgment or statement about it. I'm really just using the information that is in the public domain. So, that was the only one that I felt had maybe could have been some difficulty in that sense.
No, I can definitely understand that. We had a story that was semi-local to where I live, and it was, you know, it was only probably 20 years ago, but it involved a woman who killed her husband, but the husband claimed he was possessed, and so there was a little bit of a paranormal tie, a little bit of true crime story, but that's kind of why I backed off of it, because I, you know, not wanting to step on any toes or have any family members say, hey, I wish you hadn't done that. So, yeah, I'd rather stick with something from, you know, 200 years ago.
Yeah, it's definitely safe. Although maybe, you know, who knows? Is it safe?
So, well, Richard, let me end on this, because I always try to end on something positive. Do you think, are you surprised, let me say, by the success of the show?
Of course. Like, I mean, I started putting it together because I just wanted, you know, when you're a writer or you want to be a writer, everybody asks you, what do you write? You know, where can I see what you've written? This sort of thing. And especially when you're trying to develop TV shows, it can take a long time. And so the podcast for me was just, aside from the interest I had in the topic, and the stories, it was, you know, for me to just put something out there so people could say to me, well, they might ask me, so where can I, you say you're a writer, what have you written? And I can say, well, you know, look up Unexplained and you'll find it on iTunes. And I never expected that people would actually find it without me telling them to. So it's a surprise to me every day that it's still, you know, that it's still being listened to, in fact.
Well, Richard, Do you have some books and stuff out there already, or is it strictly pretty much this?
No, nothing at all. This is, I mean, the podcast is all there is at the moment, but I'm working on it. I hope to have other things out there soon. And actually, one of the things is developing. It's possibly trying to develop the show as a TV drama.
That would be awesome.
But I can't tell you any more about it, unfortunately.
Hey, I understand completely. So how can my listeners best get a hold of you or listen to you, find your merchandise? Give me some websites and some insights to how to reach you.
Yeah. Well, I have a Twitter. I'm on Twitter on at UnexplainedPod, and I have a website, which is, I think, unexplainedpodcast.com, if I remember correctly. But the best place to find me is really, I think, I mean, if you listen to podcasts, you'll find, obviously, you listen to podcasts and listen to this one, but iTunes, Stitcher, all these kind of things. I mean, I really want to be on Google Play, but they don't let UK shows on there yet.
So, I did not know that.
That's proved a bit of a problem for some people. But, yeah, so I think that's it really for me. Unexplainedpodcast.com, UnexplainedPod at UnexplainedPod.
That's it.
I'm new to the Twitter thing and all that stuff, so I had to learn that.
I'm kind of the same way. I got an Instagram account and I hardly ever put anything on it, so I got to get used to
that. Right.
Well, guys, I will highly advise, and I don't do this on very many podcasts, but I will highly advise that you listen to Unexplained. Just started off season two, and I'm telling you, you'll go back and listen to one episode, you'll listen to all of them, because it's completely fascinating and you'll be hooked from the beginning. But give it a listen, and I promise you will not be disappointed. Richard, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate it, and best of luck in the future and all your endeavors.
No, thank you. Thanks so much for having me, and the same to you.
And once again, I want to thank Richard McLean-Smith for doing that. When we do these interviews, we do them via Skype, and when we do one over in Great Britain, there's like a five-hour time difference. So in order to do this, you know, like at 7 or 8 o'clock at night for them guys, we have to do it at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, or vice versa. I know we heard Phil Holmes talking about when he does his, he has to do most of his interviews because most of his listeners are in America, and the time difference, because he's ahead, he's up till 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning
to
interview somebody that's just getting home at 7 from work.
Yeah.
So it makes it tough, and these guys earn their money. I'll
they
give
sure
them that.
Do. It is a lot of hard work.
I do want to say a couple of good things. Obviously, the iTunes reviews, thank you guys so much. That is what helps us move up into rankings. It's not listens. It's not any of the other stuff. It's the iTunes reviews and new subscribers. So if you can subscribe to the podcast rather than just listen, that helps. If you can give us an iTunes review, that's awesome. That helps us out. Other ways to help the show financially, we've got t-shirts on our website, hillbillyhorrorstories.com. You can buy t-shirts, and we get a little bit of the money off of that. And then also, if you want to make a one-time donation, we've had several of you do that. I like to keep those anonymous, so I won't always mention on the air the names, but you guys, it's greatly appreciated. I make sure that Tracy and I send everybody that donates to us a personal thank you, because it is heartfelt. And what do we use the donations for? Trust me, it's not to go out to fancy restaurants. We use it for trying to upgrade our equipment. We actually had an iTunes review the other day that criticized our sound quality. Now, when we first started this with Ricky and I, we had a couple of mics, and we were just starting out, and the sound quality was horrible on the first episode. That'd be the first to tell you that. It got a little bit better as we learned how to manage the controls. Christmas time, my youngest son bought us a newer microphone, and we use that. But the system we use only allows for one microphone. So some people talk about, you know, Tracy sometimes sounds like her volume is a little different than mine. And it's because the microphone's primarily closer to me instead of being closer to her, just because of the way we have to sit. And that gives a little bit of a difference in sound. We are looking to upgrade the equipment and the software, so we will have a two microphone system. And so when you guys donate money, that's what we use it for. We put it right back into the show and try to make things a little bit better. And I'm not going to lie to you, we donate to other shows.
Yeah, of course.
You know, so we use some of that, you know, some of our own money to donate to other shows. So when you guys donate to us, we use that to upgrade the show. If you're going to donate to us, we want to give you the best product possible.
Yeah, and I might just grab my new mic and just break out in song. So you guys are in for a treat.
So anybody who doesn't want that to happen, they can send their complaints to our email or our Facebook page. And by the way, we do have a Twitter, and I'm trying to really.
Sounds like a personal problem.
Yeah. We've gotten 250 users, our new Twitter followers, in the last week.
That's
so
amazing.
So it's been hitting good. So it's Hillbilly Horror, or at the Rent Daddy, T-H-E-R-E-N-T-D-A-D-D-Y. Look us up, because we can always use new Twitter followers. find us on Facebook, Hillbilly Horror Stories. Just do a search for us and get on there. We put a bunch of fun stuff on there every day, and we communicate with all of our Facebook users on a regular basis. If you respond or say something, we're going to respond back. So if you want to be able to interact with us, that's the best way to do it.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Look forward to it.
Guys, we have an awesome show next week. And these interviews, I don't know, I've been hearing a lot of positives about the interviews we're doing, and we've talked to some great people in the last couple of weeks, and there's more coming up. Just to give you the heads up, next week's show is going to be on the Stanley Hotel. And there was a pretty famous movie that was based on the Stanley Hotel. And I'll just give you a little hint. If you don't already know, we'll say Jack Nicholson. And that should probably give it to you if you don't already know. We're also going to have an interview with a group called the Haunted Explorers. They are a ghost hunting group out of Las Vegas. And they spent some time with us. We are also going to have an upcoming interview with Jake and Sam from Just a Story Podcast. I know a bunch of you have listened to that, another husband and wife team, so we'll be excited to do that. And then another one I'm excited about is K-Town from Mysterious Radio. We're actually going to do an interview with her this week. So in the next 3 weeks, you'll get the Haunted Explorer, you'll get Just a Story Podcast, Jake and Sam, and then you're going to get K-Town from Mysterious Radio. So we're going to keep bringing you the best of what's out there. Those are the big dogs, and we know you guys like to hear about them. Most of you probably listen to them, so I thought it'd be fun to get them out of their element and just talk about, you know, their shows a little bit, too.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I don't always get to be in on the interviews, but I know Jerry does a great job with that, and so I'm looking forward to it just as well.
But she will be in on the other interviews. A lot of times, because of time differences, it's a lot easier for me to get away from work because, you know, most of you know we have regular work schedules just like most people. And but Tracy has a harder time because she's in the medical field, and it's a little bit tougher to just walk out when somebody's needing, you know, medical stuff done. So
that's true.
It's a little bit easier for me. So, but the ones that we got coming up will all be done at nighttime, and it'd be easier for Tracy to be involved. It's a lot more fun when she's involved. And
well, thank you.
Like I said, we want to thank History Goes Bump. They actually had us on their show last week. If you want to go back and hear us on that, it was episode 185. But Diane and Denise are super nice. They've helped us out tremendously, just like Phil Holmes has. Just Tony and Jenny Brewski, same way from Real Ghost Stories Online. So these guys are so awesome to be able to just not look at us as competitors, but look at us as somebody they're willing to help, and we appreciate that. So we're going to help them any way we can. And once again, I'm going to throw it in the very last thing. Take a listen to Don't Break the Oath podcast. Them guys can use your support. I think once you listen to them, you're going to really like the twist they got on stuff.
Amen.
Guys, thank you so much for everything. Thank you for 50,000 downloads, and we're looking forward to the next 50,000.
Yeah, you guys have a great week, and remember to love one another.
And to all of our military, thank you for everything that you do. We'll see you next week.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino. America Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.